Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, April 4th, 2018. And with me today, I have Kelly Gaumont. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
It's great to have you here, and I'm doing fine. John Bartolaro, how are you?
I'm doing good, good, good. Good morning.
Awesome. And I'm so glad you were here, too. And I was just trying to figure out what's the best way to dive into this, because I know I get to sit back here and just kind of enjoy the conversation, because that's how it tends to go. Okay, I've got this figured out. John, you found news about the state of security on Windows 10. So, you know, hey, Apple show, we'll talk about Windows because, well, that's how we roll. But here's the deal. I'm curious with the state of security on Windows 10. What is that state, and how does that compare to Mac OS?
Well, I'm not an expert on it, but I did get some more color on it recently. Friday on Particle Debris, I ran across an article about the U.S. military having dictated that all users would be migrated to Windows 10 by March this year, with a couple of exceptions, because it's a pretty vicious global internet environment out there, and the U.S. military has to have the best security. Mm-hmm. And we've made fun of various government agencies in the past for, you know, still running the older versions of Windows, but looks like at least the U.S. military is getting on board with Windows 10. And then simultaneously, I did a background mode interview with Rich Mogul. Rich Mogul is an experienced security person. He's founded a company called Securosis, and he writes the security column for tidbits.com. Mm-hmm. And I had him on the show, and he talked about how back around roughly 2001, the U.S. government went to Microsoft and said, we're not going to be able to buy your Windows products anymore. These are the days of Windows XP, because it's just a security nightmare. And Microsoft got rid of the Riot Act and some big high-level meetings, and so they launched what was called the Microsoft Trustworthy Computing Initiative. Of somewhere around 2001 or two. I think it was 2002. And the whole thing was to get serious about security, because Windows XP security was, excuse me, but it was kind of a joke.
So, and I have to stop you for a second. Mm-hmm. Microsoft waited until this century to start like really addressing security in their operating system. And didn't do it until the military was like, look, dudes, this is a serious problem. We can't buy your product anymore.
You and will lose government like, contracts.
Windows XP was the descendant of Windows NT, which was the descendant of VMS, which was built in the days before the internet. And so it didn't have the kind of security underpinnings. And as the internet evolved from 1996, the public internet, until around 2000, things got out of control and got worse and worse. And so the underpinnings of Windows XP were not up to the task of dealing with an open internet. So, as I said, Microsoft launched this Trustworthy Computing Initiative, and that launched a process of really putting a modern infrastructure in. And we were laughing about Mac OS X being more secure because it was based on Unix. But again, that Unix was based on older versions, BSD 4.4 and FreeBSD, which hadn't been acid tested on the internet. They had been security audited, and they had been used in university environments, and they were fairly secure from casual attacks, but they couldn't stand up to the modern kinds of attacks that we've discovered all through the years. And so we kind of patted ourselves on the back in those days that, you know, Panther and Jaguar were more secure. But then Microsoft got serious and introduced something called address space layout randomization in Vista. And even though Vista was an overall user interface and an operational disaster, it's introduced ASLR long before Apple got on board with it. So as Rich Mogul describes it, the two operating systems over the first decade of the century were leapfrogging each other. And Windows 7 was probably the first time where Microsoft arrived at a point they wanted to be. But now Windows 10, according to Rich, is on par with Mac OS 10. And it's no longer, as I wrote in my article, it's no longer a situation where Windows 10 security is a laughing matter. His assessment is, and he's in the security business, is that they're on par with each other. And they're mild leapfrogs of each other from time to time. But it's no longer technically valid to say that Mac OS 10 is a more robust in an internet threat environment than Windows 10 is.
So at this point, from a security standpoint, the experts think that Mac OS and Windows 10 are pretty much equal.
Yeah.
And we are at a point now where having some sort of malware protection on your Mac seems like a prudent move. Whereas there was a time when we used to make fun of Windows users because they had to have their antivirus and their malware tools, and we didn't need to worry about any of those. So, So where am I going with this? Okay, here's where I'm going with this. John, do you think that the reason we need to have these malware tools now is because Mac OS has become less secure, or is this a case where the tools that people are using for malware is becoming more sophisticated?
I don't think you can pin it on any one thing. I think that you need a three-pronged approach. First of all, you need to keep your Mac updated. If you're still running, you know, something like Yosemite, you need to get on board with at least Sierra and start getting the security downloads, because at a certain point, Apple doesn't publish security downloads. What was the version Mac OS just before Sierra? Was it Yosemite?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some security updates for Yosemite, but not lately. And considering the gravity of the situation, I think it's important to always have the latest version of the operating system from Apple. And if that gets in the way of certain mission critical apps, it's better to deal with the mission critical apps and make arrangements and update your apps or change your apps than it is to stay on an older version of Mac OS. And then the second prong is to have some sort of malware filtering system, a virus barrier from an Eneco or some other product that scans your incoming stream in case you accidentally bump into a malicious website and block bad URLs. And then the third aspect of it is to engage in good practices so that you don't fall victim to phishing attacks, because when all else fails and the bad guys can't penetrate the system, they'll try to trick you into clicking on some software, downloading some software, saying, well, you need to enter your password to install the software and give it admin privileges, and then you have keyloggers installed. So
yes, and welcome really to the set of PSAs that go up on Mac approach. Observer to talk about this stuff. This is why when we get like an interesting looking iTunes email, you know, we better post about this because other people are going to get these too.
That's why phishing is so popular.
Well, phishing is popular because it doesn't matter what computer you have. If you make the email look convincing enough, it doesn't matter if you have a Windows machine or if you have a Mac OS machine. And that's one of the things that I think didn't get discussed before. And this is part of the landscape changing. And that is that the reason Mac users never had to have antivirus software was because people who were writing viruses didn't care, because Macs weren't a big enough target back in the day. Basically, everybody had a Windows machine, and Mac computer users were essentially a rounding error. So when you add that to the fact that there were so many different ways that you could exploit a Windows machine, it was just easier to be a person who did that than it was to try and be somebody who got into a Mac. So, you know, if you wanted to try it out or, you know, get your feet wet trying to, like, you know, do something unsavory with someone else's computer, Windows was obviously the way to go. Now that there are so many more Macs, And there are so many ways that people are aware of this stuff. That's why the attack vectors have changed. That's why you start getting phone calls about your computer. And that's why those dialogue boxes have more or less gone away. The thing that looks like a, that's supposed to look like a Windows dialogue box, but...
Or your computer has been infected. Click here to clean your Mac.
Yes. And it doesn't work on my computer because that doesn't look like my operating system. So it's very obvious to me that that's an unsavory attempt at my computer. Ha ha. And then I can close it and move on with my life. That's why the phishing emails have gotten more popular and the phone calls. And that's where that stuff is coming from, because there are always going to be people who want to get at you, who do not have the best of intentions in doing so. And that's so, like, there's, you know, John, you almost have to add another prong there, which is like situational awareness. Like, did I buy anything from Apple recently? Because, like, this receipt looks funny. Or is there something going on because Apple wants me to go to this site and enter my password? Like, and you have to look at that stuff and be very aware of what it is you're seeing, because sometimes just paying an ounce of attention will eliminate a lot of that stuff will eliminate the effectiveness of a lot of that stuff. Because if you just pay attention, you know, like, I have family members where they got that phone call about how their Windows computer was in bad shape and had all these viruses. And, you know, if you just write me a check, I'll make sure and clean it up for you. And I remember my family going, but we don't have a Windows computer. And then the person being like, oh, well, I meant your Mac. And my family went, no, that's not true. And then, it was pretty funny. Yeah. Because then the person tried to say, oh, well, you know, I'm from Apple. And then my family said, oh, I have family that works at Apple. Maybe you know each other. Can I get your name? And they hung up. So, yes, I then got a phone call from somebody, from a member of my family who said, I'm really sorry, Kelly, but I lied to someone on the phone and said you worked at Apple. And I'm like, and then told me the story. And I'm like, okay, that lie was totally great because it's way better than the lie they were telling you. So absolutely. If it got them off the phone, you tell that to anyone you want. So those are the, like, you just have to have some awareness and like stop and think that stuff through. And like, that's always going to be your best virus protection, your best malware protection, is just to pay an ounce of attention. And like, yeah, is this a thing I did? Is this supposed to be what I'm seeing? You know, does this look the way that it should? And that stuff should be, generally, that will be the biggest protection. You know, just like if somebody's trying to be a car thief, if you roll up your windows and lock all your doors, they're going to just try a different door, you know, and they're going to get somebody with a car that's unlocked. You know, like that's always going to be like, that's always going to keep a good number of people from breaking in. So
what's interesting about this discussion is that it's no longer valid to tell your friends, well, you should buy a Mac because it's more secure.
Right.
I think that's the mental shift of gears we have to go through. The environment, both the attacks and defenses, are so energetic and at such a high level that it's no longer respectable to say, you know, buy a Mac because it's more secure. Buy a Mac because it's easier to maintain. Maybe it suits your lifestyle better. Maybe the quality of the hardware is better than PC hardware, but in terms of security, that's an outmoded idea now.
Well, and part of that has to do with Microsoft actually developing honest security tools, real life security pieces that you can turn on and turn off and adjust as necessary that are out of the box. Like when you open your, I want to say it's Windows Defender, and that may be the wrong name. And if it is, I apologize. It's been a long time since I had to look at it. But there's like Security Essentials, I think, and then Windows Defender. And when you turn that stuff on, it's very, like, I have to give them props for this because the last time I had to set it up, like I said, it's been some time. It was very clear what turning it on and turning it off did. There were a number of switches. So there's like different sorts of pieces of the security suite that you can enable and disable as you want. And it's very clear what those things are. And they were very useful. And I know a number of people who work day to day in Windows environments who have nothing but good things to say about the tools. They're like, yeah, they're solid. They don't jump up and get in your way. And for the most part, they don't cause you inadvertent hassle. You know, the number one reason people turn off their antivirus or their malware scanners is because they're getting fake positives on a lot of stuff, or it's just a giant pain in the neck to try to install a piece of software because here comes your virus scanner going, you can't install stuff, it might be a virus, you know, and it's not, like, I know what I'm doing. And so that's one piece that I think really Microsoft needs to get props for, because it used to be a complete disaster and you had to rely on something external, and that's not really the case anymore. Just like macOS, when you get it and you walk through the security stuff out of the box, you can be reasonably protected with what you got as part of the OS.
Another thing that Rich Mogul told me is that he has a high level of confidence in iCloud Keychain. He said the security measures that are put into place there are very good.
Well, that's saying that, a lot, coming from Rich.
Yeah, yes.
That I had thought that the keychain was maintained at Apple, and that's not what happens, is that your keychain is securely updated, uploaded to Apple, and then synced to the other devices.
Mm-hmm.
But Apple did, so that a hacker could obtain the encrypted version of it, so and go after it somehow. So if you had security concerns like I did about iCloud Keychain, Rich Mogul put that to rest.
Okay, well, that's good to know. And I guess people that are using the lazy the lazy reason for buying a Mac because it's more secure need to look to other reasons now, which, in my opinion, is actually a good thing, because there are a lot of other factors that come into play when choosing the correct computer platform for whatever it is you need to do. So, and I'm okay with Windows 10 being on par security-wise with macOS, because what that tells me is that both Microsoft and Apple need to stay on their top game to make sure that they're not falling behind each other. So that,
I got
that,
a pretty
that's
nice
a win for us.
I got a nice introduction to Windows 10 when I reviewed that Hewlett-Packard Z2 Mini.
Mm-hmm.
And while Microsoft Windows is very different than macOS, you have to learn new ways of doing things in new places and new architecture and things like that. It was a fun operating system to use, I thought.
Well, you know what?
Of course, in a week's worth of use, people will tell me, well, John, you haven't been exposed to the deeper evils of Windows 10.
Yeah.
Because you only had a week. But I'll admit that, too.
Which is enough for right now. Yeah. All right. We could keep talking about this, but I want to hit a couple listener comments from yesterday. So yesterday, I talked about the big disappointment I had with HomeKit and the way it failed catastrophically for me. and left me in a position where I had to just wipe out,
burn it all down.
I had to burn it down and start from scratch. And so I talked about that yesterday. And between the show and the editorial I wrote about this, I got a lot of comments. So I'm going to, we should talk about the first one. And we only have a couple minutes, so we'll try to not run over by too much.
Okay.
So we'll talk about the first comment in mass, which was, I was surprised how many people responded saying, this is all on Tim Cook. This is a reflection of Tim Cook's poor leadership and is an example of the poor quality we get from Apple products when Steve Jobs isn't around. And that's kind of a paraphrase of all of the "it's Tim Cook's fault" comments together.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think about that?
You know, when Tim Cook first took over, there were lots of apocryphal articles about how the atmosphere had become more relaxed. People weren't afraid of getting into the elevator with Tim Cook, as the story goes. People weren't walking in fear of losing their jobs or being ridiculed in meetings. Tim Cook had instilled, he's a stern fellow. I can't say I worked with him, but I've been around him a lot when I was at Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very strong taskmaster. He's very no-nonsense. He's very stern when he wants to be. But he can also be more cordial and relaxed. Steve Jobs could too. But the stories were that Tim Cook created an atmosphere where people could live in a corporate life without being so agitated and anxious, and get back to work and have fun and build great products. So that was the story in the early days. That has created a problem over the last 8 or 9 years that Tim Cook has been in charge, and things have gotten too relaxed. Maybe.
I don't know. I mean, we there's no way for us to know for sure if this would have played out with Steve Jobs, or played out differently with Steve Jobs at the helm, because it's literally impossible to see how that would play out.
There was an electric atmosphere when you were working in the days with Steve Jobs. I was there when Steve Jobs was CEO, and there was this constant wonder, constant amazement, excitement, but it was filled with tension and concern.
And also a lot of product fails.
And yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So,
see, the thing is, I feel like that's... I'm of two minds about the comment about, like, oh, this is Tim and this never would have happened under Steve. First of all, that's lazy, because it's an easy thing to say, because as you said, Jeff, there's absolutely no way to prove it. And second of all, I'm not hearing those comments from people I know who worked under Steve, and even people who worked closely with, you know, from whether they worked closely with Steve Jobs or whether they worked at the company during his time as CEO, like John did. I'm not hearing it from those people. Like, John doesn't go around saying that all the time. Other people I know who worked at Apple, you know, regardless of the degrees of Kevin Bacon, they were away from Steve. Like, I'm not hearing that from those people. I'm hearing it from the same people who say things like, Apple's new product. They're the same people who will both shout, there is an utter lack of innovation in this design, which is a refinement. So obviously Apple is doomed. And then when Apple puts out something new, they say Apple shouldn't be innovating. They should be fixing everything else so that it's flawless. Obviously Apple is doomed. So there's like a huge bunch of those comments that I tend to write off unless I know something about that person. They worked at Apple under Steve, so they do have a comparison of styles or of testing methodologies or whatever it is. Like, the people who are saying it don't tend to have any context. So by and large, this wouldn't happen under Steve is lazy, and I tend to ignore it unless it comes from one of a very small number of people I know who are in a place to actually be able to say it.
Okay, so we are totally over, but I want to toss out...
But we need to talk about the other one.
Yeah. And I mean, there were lots of comments, but what I'm doing for brevity is taking the comment categories and referring to them. So like the Tim Cook thing, here's the other thing that, that came up a lot in comments, and it was Me Too. I was surprised at how many people said, I've had the same problem as you. And what I found from the comments is that it didn't matter if you were running beta anything on any of your devices. It was just across the board. And so it didn't matter what version of iOS you had. It didn't matter if you're running an iPhone or an iPad. It didn't matter if you're running betas. It was just this common theme of, at some point, my home app got stuck in the I'm syncing loop, and the only way to resolve this was to nuke and pave. So my takeaway from that is that the real problem here is Apple's cloud services, iCloud, and that there's some issue with the way iCloud is handling the files that are used to keep track of your entire HomeKit setup. And so when something goes wrong on the iCloud side, it manifests itself through the Home app. And then HomeKit becomes the scapegoat. And I certainly rode HomeKit pretty hard in my editorial. And maybe I shouldn't have, but I think that because HomeKit is where the failure happened for me, it reflects on HomeKit and tells me, regardless of the infrastructure, HomeKit is not reliable today. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Man, we're way over time, so I'm just going to have to wrap us up, even though I'd love to keep talking about this. But I will say, listeners, thank you so much for all the comments. And a couple people were critical of me because I didn't call Apple and ask them to help me with this. And that's okay. Be critical and call me out on stuff. I'm fine with that. I didn't call Apple because everything that I had seen and experienced told me I was going to get the exact same response regardless. So I just went ahead and saved the time and did a nuke and pave. But listeners, thank you so much for the comments. Thank you so much for listening and just being part of the show. I absolutely love that. I also love that you guys are here, Kelly and John. Thank you so much for being on today.
Thanks so much for having me. And I just want to say that I feel like it's good news and bad news how much agreement you got with this is what happened to me as well. And all I could do was burn it all down. Like, it's kind of reassuring that that was the only answer and that that's what you ended up doing. But at the same time, it's also really disappointing that that was the only answer and that that's the only thing that seemed to work for people. So, this honestly, that sort of made me happy that I never got past the part of HomeKit where two people live at my house and one of us has to invite the other. And I just got mad at that and quit. And so I'm team Alexa at my house now.
Yeah. So. The A lady's voice seems happier now because I'm talking to the Echo a lot more since my HomeKit meltdown.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So, listeners, thank you again for being here and, looking forward to talking to
audio recording. Tomorrow.
Yes. Yes. All right. Thanks for being here, everyone. We'll see you again tomorrow.